In the Bible, in the book of Hebrews, in chapter 5, verse 13, the author writes, "Anyone who lives on milk, being still an infant, is not acquainted with the teaching about righteousness. But solid food is for the mature, who by constant use have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil." The author shared those thoughts with just a bit of anger, because he knew that even our Christian walk is a process of maturing, hopefully, moving from phase to phase, growing in our understanding of God's plan for our life, and experiencing new challenges as we progress. Welcome to Focus on the Family. We're going to talk about the stages or the phases of our own lives on today's edition of the broadcast as we move into part four of a conversation with the late Mrs. Jean Lush. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout. Welcome to the broadcast. We're dealing with the stages of a woman's life, and if you've missed any of our previous discussions, I hope you'll look for a book written by Jean Lush called Emotional Phases of a Woman's Life in a bookstore near you. It's published by Revell. At this particular point in this series, and we are down to the last 30 minutes of conversation, we're crossing the menopause line and are going on into the changes that occur in a woman's life during those years, which are often called the second half years. With a quick recap of where we've been and an introduction to where we're going, here's our host, Dr. James Dobson.
We've been talking first about the 30s, and then about the late 30s and early 40s, when a kind of a premenopausal circumstance often occurs. Not for every woman, but for many. Enough that it warrants information about. And we've been talking with counselor Jean Lush, who's had more than 30 years of experience in counseling, has devoted the ministry of counseling, and you do consider it a ministry, don't you, Jean?
Very much.
Yeah. You've devoted it largely to women. And as I understand it, you feel that God himself revealed this ministry to women to you.
Yes, it was a very strange experience, really, because you have to believe how happy we were in the house where we were. We had our ideal home in the foothills in Adelaide, and we had dreamed for long years of having this place. I wanted to live and die there. And one of my hobbies there was I wanted to grow flowers, beautiful flowers that I could even sell. And we just started in on this delicious thing, and Lila, of course, was at artwork, and everything was ideal. You know, and at this time, when the kids were small, I had this peculiar sort of a meeting with the Lord. I can't describe it other than that this wasn't where it was going to be, that I would one day be speaking to women all over the world. This was very odd. And the Lord also directed me at this time to cease to put all the energies into developing this garden, into this gorgeous flower paradise, and that for the moment I had to start and study, and I had to know the Bible from end to end. It was the first thing the Lord told me. The Lord also told me many strange things about my husband too. Everything that was revealed to me has come to pass. Hmm. You realize what I'm doing here today is talking to women all over.
Now, are not a terribly ambitious person. This was not an expression of a big ego.
Oh, please, no. Yeah. No. What do you think I was living out in the foothills for? You know what I mean? This lovely, lonely life where we would have a great chance to bring up our children in the ways that we wanted to, you know, out of the city and everything. Now, I can't call myself that, because I love the life of a woman. And if you came to my kitchen, you would see that. Mm. I love even collecting kitchen utensils, of which I have hundreds. I tend to be a woman who's a bit of a vegetable in a way, in a natural kind of a way. And this was against the natural me that I had this sort of vision. And the vision seemed to say, you will have to prepare yourself for a ministry to women. My training had been largely in literature, a great deal in horticulture, that kind of area. Now, a year later, the Lord opened up the way rather suddenly for us to come to this ministry in America, you see, at King's Garden. And
in
you know what?
Seattle.
In Seattle.
Yes.
The first thing that happened, I was put in charge of 45 teenage girls, some of them quite older. This began, in a way, my first experience to women, as you might say, young women. And then at the same time, I found I had to train myself, you see, at that time, because I had never had a single social science course in my life before that vision. Hmm. And so then, of course, I started to go to the university and started quietly, sometimes by mail, you know, just as I could, I started to fit this in. Now, this was an obedience, that vision, that strange vision mm-hmm. the Lord gave me, that I had to look to the unknown, just like Abraham said, go to a land which I shall show you of. And always that was the back of my mind. The training got more and more difficult to fulfill, of course, And anyway, I took courses, you know, at that time in all the social sciences to get me ready, always with a strange vision there. Then the time came for graduate work, and again, I knew that I had to go ahead. At that time, man, we were poor. There was no money, and there was nothing to do this, but I had to go on, you know. And people said, don't be silly. A lot of people said, nobody. Look, I never had worried about what other people said, because the Lord had already said, yeah, you know, what I had to do.
And you had three children at this time to take care of, too, didn't you?
Yes. And, of course, they always were preeminent in my life, and so training was slow. I fitted it in when I could. At one time, when we were really out of money, you wouldn't believe it, the University of Washington awarded me a scholarship, you know, simply to go on and do the work that I was doing. And so always, somehow, we got by. By the way, you wouldn't believe what I looked like in those days. Oh, I think I wore a man's shirt. I had one cardigan. I looked a fright. And there was no money for anything. But the vision was there, and I had to go ahead, you know, really, and finish.
And you were obedient
training
to it.
Yes, I always was obedient to that vision. Now, this was how it got started. Now, when I came finished, then I didn't know what to do either, because it seemed like I ought to go back in Christian work. But still, at that time, the Lord led me into further and further training. I realized then I must start my training to be a marriage counselor, and that's a different kind of training.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I chose a place, which was Family Counseling Services, where I'd get a lot of supervision and still fulfilling what I had to do. So I always tried to be as qualified as I could for what the Lord wanted me to do. And so that's how it really all began.
Well, you've developed an expertise in so many areas related to the family and marriage and parenting. And we're going to talk today about the menopausal understanding that you have. We talked, as I said, about the premenopausal condition. Let me pose a difficult situation to you, and then you take it from there. Let's suppose we're talking right now to a woman who is in the pits. She's 44 years of age. She has no energy. She's totally depleted. She's depressed a good part of the time. She is thinking those what-if thoughts and if-only thoughts that you talked about the last time. Mm-hmm. You know, all kinds of things going on physically. Menstrual periods are stopping and her body is changing. She's aware of that. Talk directly to her and give her some advice and tell her what's happening to her body.
Well, now, of course, she may come as a client. And the first thing I would want her to do is to find a good gynecologist. And then I would suggest that, of course, she must explore medical treatment, you know, with such a gynecologist.
Mm-hmm.
But then I might want her to tell me about the particular kinds of, perhaps, depression that she's going through. Now, she can have all kinds of symptoms. By the way, not all women going through the menopause have the classic symptoms.
Yes, I think
a lot
that's
of symptoms
important.
Are sort of projected. Now, for instance, I've seen people very occupied with, say, sickness or death, for instance, at this time, may be a sort of a substitution kind of thing they'd be going through. Others may push on to overwork, but I do think that any woman who tries to say, I never felt a thing, I would have to chuckle, because I'll guarantee there would be some changes manifest to those who knew her at this time. So there are some emotional changes that simply are apparent to others, you know, if not for yourself.
But now, not everybody falls apart.
Oh, no. Remember now, about 86%, I think, of all women are very functional, meaning they don't lose a day of work in whatever it is they're doing. It's about anything 13, 14, 15% of women that are affected enough so that they actually are not too functional. Mm-hmm. Now, out of that group, there's a very small percentage that really have what I call serious. I've only seen two or three in my life that had psychotic symptoms at this time. So actually, what most women go through this fairly well, with some annoying discomforts,
mm-hmm,
really, what was what we were talking about. I don't think we should lose the perspective of this thing.
Describe the difference between premenstrual tension and menopausal symptoms. How do those differ for the woman who's experienced both?
I think there's some difference. Now, this is what I think, remember now. I think that the premenopausal depression is a nasty, biting, vicious kind of an anger in which you emotionally want to bite something. You want to hurt. You are destructive.
That's premenstrual tension.
That's premenstrual tension.
Yeah.
It's almost like vicious and biting. But I have found now, we'll look at the woman in the early 40s, what we call the premenopausal phase. It's more of a blah, droopy sort of feeling that may be more thinking about herself as a miserable human being kind of thing. And then I think when we move into what I call a full-blown menopause itself, where we've got the physical symptoms and we really know she's in it, then I think we're likely at times to get phases of depression in which there are some days you don't want to do a thing, all you want is stay in bed, and then all of a sudden a few days later you're okay again. And I think there's more of a phasic depression, mm-hmm. which really comes and goes, as I've seen
in
this time.
I've seen an irrationality there, though, too, with regard to jealousy and that the husband may be involved in something which he hadn't even thought about being involved
so
in.
So have
and,
I.
And a distortion of reality, an inability to assess circumstances sometimes.
Now, I put down just a few things here. Of course, the list is endless, and every woman is very different. I jot down here, nervous exhaustion, more extreme fluctuation in mood and fatigue, diminished energy, and of course you all know the hot flushes and sweating, the headaches, anxiety, you know, irritability. There's a tendency now for some phases of more deeper depression, you see, than we've seen before. Feelings of sadness or loss, a dreary sense of dissatisfaction, a preoccupation with the body now that I think is even deeper. Melancholy, anxiety, frigidity, easily offended, looks for slights, or regressive behavior, I think is very important at this phase. Some experts refer to a repetition of puberty-type behavior here at times. Childishness, in other words, that I would say.
See, I can hear people saying, especially people with the persuasion of the Women's Liberation Movement, aha, you're laying all that out there, and you're going to keep women down and keep them from holding positions of responsibility, and they never will get elected president as long as you tell people that they're going to go through this and have their finger on the nuclear button as well.
Well, I'm going to say to them, how dare you infer that we got to keep a lid on the way we really are? You know, and I would take the opposite extreme to that and say, we have a right to say what we're going through. Why should we? Why? Look, this is part of the marvelous part of being a woman. There are special things to being a woman, and there are some things we battle with and we come out strong. So I think that's silly that we should have to cover up some of the things we battle with. But I still think that if we face these things and know them for what they are, we're going to have a lot less trouble with them. Uh-huh. You see, after all, knowledge and awareness is going to bring control. And I don't like covering these things up and letting everybody suffer in silence, because then I think it really hurts if you feel that you alone, you know, are really. Besides, it comes down to feeling like that you're an awful person and an awful Christian.
Yeah.
If we let women just suffer alone and we don't bring these things out, I don't see it as negative that we bring it out. I see it as we're beginning to share, so we lessen the fear and are able to bring more control into it.
Let's talk about the positive side, Jean. I know you know the limitations of your training, and that stops at the door of the medical realm.
Yes.
And so I don't want to take you into the medical treatment. We've already had a guest here who was an expert on that. But it can be treated. I think we do need to say
this
point.
And what wonderful treatments we have now at our disposal for many, many women that can change it. And I sought medical treatment when I went through the menopause because I was very negative when I went through it, and medical treatment changed me very quickly. I got very quick relief, you see, here in doing that. But now let's look at a little bit of what happens. Look, some women go through this very fast. We're not really talking about years and years.
I was about to ask you the time factor, how long it
lasts. My mother was over in a month. She happened to go on a sea voyage and was immediately better in 1 month and never looked back again. And so some women go through this in a very short time without too much going on. But I think I like to refer to this, you know, I mean, as a small door to the larger life. And all of a sudden now women are entering into the greatest phase they've ever had. Our marriage statistics show this, that marriages, when this is over, are the greatest that people have ever had.
If they get through it.
By the way, yes, we are concerned sometimes steadying the boat in the rocky waters, you know, of the 40s. Yes, we are. But after that period, marriages are very great, and women themselves emerge with a lot of great ability, and perhaps the greatest ability, really, that they've ever had. Now, you remember the writings of Benedict, the greatest woman analyst, I suppose, that ever lived. Remember, she had an analytic school in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Her book, she has a very large book, is very great, and I'm afraid it's out of print, but it's a marvelous book. And she particularly has got the idea that once the reproductive cycle has closed down, it's like the owner's free to do fresh things, you see. Uh-huh. And so we have more energy at our disposal for learning, for greater socialization, and for, as she puts it, larger feeling. She feels we're not so narrow, not so, perhaps if we've tended to be petty or we've tended to take slights heavily, she feels now we're free from that. And she feels that we are capable of becoming the rulers, the great people after that. Hmm. Now, one time in my own menopause groups, we decided to have a look around at all the people in the world that were famous, and it was amazing how many of them we realized were really postmenopausal women that were leading the world.
Golda Meir.
Golda Meir was
like
one
that,
of them, I remember. I wish I could remember some of the others. Well, we also looked at Miss Eleanor Roosevelt's life, and we looked at her early life and then compared the great ministries and the great things she did, you know, toward this later period. Now, I am very strong on the point of it. Every woman now has got to go on finding out what the Lord wants her to do, because I believe I could give you some fabulous stories about women who found a ministry even though they had so very, very few really gifts to start with, who simply looked to the Lord. I don't believe the Lord is actually concerned with our capabilities, it's our availability, you see, that the Lord really wants from us. Now, I don't want to imply that every woman's got to go into great training to be something. That just happened to be my life, you see. Mm-hmm. But that has got nothing to do with the way the Lord uses people, is it? That, you know what I mean? Perhaps some may be called to do that. But every woman can have a great ministry. And I think we've got to be preoccupied now with that larger life as a Christian, really, at this time, is going to be the biggest answers now that we can talk about.
Just as the energies of the body are not being dissipated on the reproductive process,
yes,
whether pregnant or not, that whole process of the menstrual cycle drains the body of energy.
Yes.
And once that closes off, you should have more energy. But that's also symbolic of the greater energy you should have now that your effort is not going into motherhood. You know,
yes,
raising a toddler and raising a teenager and cooking and cleaning and changing diapers and doing all that stuff is also an extremely important function, but one, when it's over, leaves a woman free to all kinds of things for the Lord and ministries.
Now, I'm a very strong believer in that. And so, of course, I see that this whole area we're talking about is the gateway, you see what I mean, that, to what I would call simply the larger life. Maybe there have been difficulties. And believe me, I have had those difficulties as bad as you can have them. You know, all these things we've been talking about.
So this is autobiographical as well.
Oh, my. Look, I think that's why I am so sympathetic with women. Honestly, I think if I'd sailed through and hadn't been touched by these things, I doubt if I would know about them or be sympathetic about them. Because I've had them badly. You know, is what...
You know, Gene, it's really interesting that the human female is the only species in all the animal kingdom. We're not really animals, we got a soul, but you know what I mean. In all the animal kingdom, the human female is the only one that lives for an appreciable amount of time after the reproductive cycle is over.
Yes.
And God must have ordained that for a purpose.
Yes.
He wants something from women at that time.
Yes. Yes, that really is a very important thing for a woman to feel, you know what I mean? They don't stop at this time.
Yeah.
I think now's the time that we push on to perhaps... See, often when the women are first married, they may have had many kind of goals, but often they have to now be dropped, perhaps. You can't go ahead with them during these years when the family takes so much energy. And I think sometimes we can just go back and look at some of the things that we really would have liked to have done. You see, now's the time to get ahead and do them.
Speak to the husband of the menopausal woman. She's in the pits. What does he do?
Well, he needs a lot more education. He really does, because remember, at times this woman's going to be just a plain drag. And I think that I wish we could educate every man, you know, to believe it's not his fault. You see, it's so hard.
And it may not be her fault either.
That's right. I mean,
it's nobody's fault.
Yes. Yeah. And so the husband does need a lot of education, really, to give some support, and particularly helping a woman feel that she's really great, you know, and nothing's going to change, you know, really between them and that kind of thing. But I do think, too, that not always can he go into self-pity with her, too, because I think we're all going to need some structure, perhaps at this time.
I heard you say one time, which may be interpreted as kind of insulting to women, but I heard you say that when a woman is in the pits, when she is in that menopausal misery, that her husband may have to play a kind of parenting role with
yes.
her. Describe what you mean.
Well, I think two, even almost every month, he has to play that at times. You know, a husband can say, look, I understand that this isn't the real you. You know, this is yeah. something now that you may be sort of even a victim of. And to give more nurturance, I meant like more nurturance, more support, and it's really like you comfort a very small child. When a little girl is hurting, the father takes her on a knee and says, there, as long as you've got daddy, it's going to be all right. You know, I won't allow anything to touch you. I think it's somewhat like that, that I think that I would wish, you know, yeah. that husbands could do and say, we are together in this, this thing will pass, to tell her that she is going to be all right. Because remember, all the way through in these down periods, I think there's a lot of fear, mm-hmm. you know, of women, and I think that women need to be reassured that she's all right.
The only trouble mm-hmm. is that a child who's hurting puts her arms around daddy's neck and mm-hmm. snuggles up on his lap and says, daddy, I'm hurting,
yes.
and he puts his
yeah.
big arms around her. But the menopausal woman who's hurting, or the woman in premenstrual tension, bites him. Kicks him in the
yes,
shins,
yes,
hits him
yes.
with a karate chop to
yes.
the neck,
yes.
and then says, love
yeah.
me.
Yes, I know she does. But look, if men will rise above that, now this is where, of course, a man can show great leadership and be able to say and to know, this will pass. You know what I mean? This isn't you. I believe there's an actual change of personality at that time that does not belong to the woman. You see here, mm-hmm. and if he could see it, like my husband did at that time, he just refused to take any notice of the things I might have said. He just shrugged his shoulders and said, you're going to feel different in a few days. And that helped me an awful yeah. lot. You know, when, in fact, I was able to say to my growing children, look, my bad day is ahead. You know, I'm going to yeah. be pretty nasty. In the next few days, you're going to have to bear with me. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think my whole family were, at least they tried to be understanding. They got to recognize this.
Jean, let me tell you a very important point from my perspective is that the parent of the teenage girl would do well to do the same plotting of the calendar and to brace himself or herself also, because a 14 or 15 or 16-year-old girl can also become very, very cranky and rebellious
yes.
at that time.
Yes.
And you might just have to overlook a little bit then as well as you do in your own wife.
By the way, a precious counselor the other day said to me, Jean, I think you're going to be proud of me. I want to show you something. He opened up a little diary that he keeps, and he showed me where he jotted down the time that his beautiful teenage daughter, you see, has her premenstrual tension.
Yeah.
And he said, see, I'm learning.
How about that?
Isn't that neat? and so I think that's the way a father could be, to allow for a bit and not confront or deal with her, because I've seen young girls to be very irrational at that time.
Yeah. And there's room for only one impulsive, irrational, volatile person in a house at one time,
at one time,
believe me. What do you do when you get a mother and a daughter in premenstrual tension at the same time?
I think you're going to have nasty rows and some nasty things said, very likely. Yeah.
Jean, I can't believe it, but our time is gone again. It just seems like our conversations barely get started, and we have to end them. Bless you, Jean, and the work that you're doing. I feel it's extremely important, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Well, that next conversation will either have to be on tape or in heaven. Jean Lush went home to be with the Lord last year, but what a privilege it is to share her thoughts again with you. We've been presenting a four-part series called The Stages of a Woman's Life on this broadcast. I hope you've caught all of those conversations. If not, look for a copy of Jean's book called Emotional Phases of a Woman's Life in a bookstore near you. This program is provided by Focus on the Family. Our producer for the series has been Kelly Crowther. Engineering and production were handled by John Dorick and David Salkeld. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.